your communication has to keep up with your clinical education. You can't progress one further without bringing the other along. Because if you do, now you're just talking about over-treatment. And so when you get patients that come to your office and they come in with this laundry list of treatment that that someone else has given them, and they're like, they tried to sell me all this stuff. Honestly, most of the time that I see that, I'm kind of like, I mean, I agree.
Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast, a podcast all about working smarter, not harder, pushing dentists to go beyond dental school dentistry and build the practice of your dreams. Here is your host, the Millennial Dentist himself, Dr. Sully Sullivan.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast. I hope you're having a great day today. I'm excited about this episode. Just so you know, before we get too much into this podcast, this one's going to be a little different, a little bit of uniqueness going on today. We're going to be diving into a little bit of treatment planning slash communication slash some things I'm working on with our associate doctors that I think's very beneficial and helpful. If you can jump on over to YouTube and listen to it on YouTube, then I'll cue some instances where it will be great to be able to look at the photos that I'm looking at, which if you're listening to it on YouTube, you're also watching it on YouTube. So even if you're in your car, put it on YouTube. And then if we get to the part where we're talking about the photos, you at least know what we're talking about. So that's something to consider. I'm going to try to do more of this, but check it out. Just YouTube search Millennial Dentist Podcast. You'll find it. Subscribe, listen, like. Hey, I'm very excited about 2024, big year coming. Lots of things at 3D Dentist that we're doing. The summit is May 4th and 5th. Morgan Wallen's in Nashville. It's going to be great. Year one was epic. Year two is going to be even more epic. So sign up, bring your team, check it out, 3D-dentist.com. Okay, so what we're going to jump into today is treatment planning. And part of this is because every now and then my associate doctors will look at me and they'll be like, I just don't understand, or I feel like we're over-treating. And that's something that I really take on personally. Because if I hear that someone's telling me that, hey, you're over-treatment planning or over-treating a patient, then I'm like, wait a second, I don't think that's the case. I honestly think I'm a pretty conservative treatment planner, frankly. But I do believe that we've got to give patients the opportunity to say yes to the best. And what I mean by that is it's our due diligence to explain to patients and talk to patients about when things are broken or no longer being fixed. And a lot of this comes down to like what we learned in dental school, because in dental school, we really learned to treat two things, right? We learned to treat cavities, caries, and gum disease. Like that was kind of the basis, the foundation of things we taught. We don't learn a lot about crowding, function, wear, occlusal disease, erosion, and the impacts that that can have on the joint, systemic health, airway, all these things that you can learn. So, you know, and those of you that have been through a core curriculum, you know, like a COIS, a SPEAR, a 3D dentist, 3D treatment planning, or something like that, that where you're learning about how to treat people comprehensively, would look at the stuff that I talk about sometimes and be like, yeah, I totally get it. Absolutely, we should be talking to patients about that. But if you're not looking at it through that lens, if you're looking through it through a kind of your typical dental school lens, then you're missing stuff. And the reality is a lot of the education is expensive. And frankly, a lot of the education doesn't teach you how to communicate. So then it's even worse. Now you got dentists who know about this stuff. They see it. Then they try to talk about it. And I told David, the periodontist that works with us, I said, David, the challenge is that your communication has to keep up with your clinical education. Let me repeat that. That may be like a headline of today. Your communication has to keep up with your clinical education. You can't progress one further without bringing the other along. Because if you do, now you're just talking about over-treatment. And so when you get patients that come to your office and they come in with this laundry list of treatment that someone else has given them, and they're like, they tried to sell me all this stuff. Honestly, most of the time that I see that, I'm kind of like, I mean, I agree. Now, sometimes there are cases where I'm like, yeah, I think that's insane. But a lot of the times, it's actually true that the stuff that they're saying that they should consider getting done needs to be done, or doesn't necessarily need to be done, but it would benefit the patient to do. The challenge there is the communication didn't keep up with the clinical education as far as what they're learning and implementing and trying to get better at. And so then we create patient overwhelm. So the challenge that I see is a pendulum that swings is new dentist comes out, or when you're newer in your career, or even if you're not necessarily new in your career, but you really haven't gone into comprehensive dentistry treatment planning, where you treatment plan single tooth dentistry at a time, quadra dentistry at a time. You never are really looking at arches or smiles or full mouth type stuff, then you never really need to level up your communication on some level to be able to have conversations and get patients to understand the value of moving forward with that treatment. So I like to kind of break it down like this. What my goal is for our doctors and myself is that we give patients the opportunity to say, like I said, you say yes to the best in a way that they can see all the options that they have, and then based off their personal preference of how they move forward, that's how we treat them. So let me give you some analogies to kind of set the stage before we dive into this. One would be tires. I think tires is a good one to talk about, because, you know, at what point do you get new tires, right? Like tires, you get them, they're working, they're a lot like teeth, they're made to function. They're made to function a long time, but based off how you use your tires and the environment that the tires are in, the tires wear down. Eventually the tires pop, they need to be extracted, and implants need to be put back in. They wear down, the tread, you know, they don't do what they, you know, they become more, they don't do as well in different conditions. And the challenge there is at what point should we tell someone to replace their tires? Like that really is the crux of the problem is, do I tell them that, hey, the tread is now lost. I think by all normal thing, we should replace them. Do we let people ride them until literally they pop? Like, because if that happens, if you ride the tire till it pops and now we introduce potentially a wreck, now we have greater damage, right? Like the irony is that the sooner that I address the problem, that typically the better the prognosis is. So when you look at this in regards to teeth, you know, my joke is always, is when is the best time to fix the amalgam that has cracks? It's the day before it breaks. And that is impossible to predict. So we'll have dentists who, you know, they'll look at something and they'll say, let's monitor this, let's watch this. And it's like, what are we watching it keep happening until the day it breaks? And so my thing is like, what I want us to, we've got to do differently in dentistry and we've got to do different in our treatment planning is we've got to start telling patients, look, what this was designed to do is no longer doing what it was designed to do. If a filling is designed to seal and protect the tooth and that seal is broken, in my opinion, it should be addressed. If the filling is now causing structural damage to the tooth, it's probably time to address the tooth. Now, we're going to kind of do this in two phases. One is going to be, because I really just care about the first phase, which is that, should we address the tooth? How you address the tooth is really a different topic, and we'll kind of touch on that towards the latter half of the episode. But yeah, so I'm looking at things, I'm saying, okay, look, at this point, I would not be riding on this tire because the tread's gone away to the point where I think that you're going to have issues and we run the risk of having a bigger problem. That's the point I introduced. Now, when that becomes a little bit of a personal preference, right? And so I like to then use the analogy, another car analogy, of that some of you will get gas as soon as your tank goes below half. Like as soon as it goes half, you're like, oh, I gotta get gas. And then others of you, you know who you are, you will literally don't fill up until the light comes on. And if you had it your way, you would coast in to getting gas. Some of you would rather get gas at half a tank because you're going to strategically then go to Costco to get your discount. And so you're just going to constantly fill up in smaller increments because you want to make sure that you can time it up to get the discount. Whereas some of you don't even care about the discount. You'd rather just run it to the end because it's inconvenient to go get it. And then if you have an electric car, well, I don't know how to help you right now because I don't have one. I am excited though. I think I'm going to get the Rivian. So TBD on that. Maybe I'll do a review. So maybe I'll have a better analogy for electric car users. So I digress. So the point is that how I treat the patients really then have to come down to how the patient wants to be treated. And so I believe that it's our job from a communication standpoint to lay out the dentistry is broken. The dentistry is failing. The dentistry is no longer doing what it's supposed to do. And which in turn, I then can ask the patient, do you want to be reactive? Do you want to be proactive? Mr. Patient, are you someone who wants to fill up their gas tank as soon as they go below half a tank? Or are you someone that wants to ride the thing until and play the gamble game and try and not run out of gas? Because I want to meet people where they're at. And this is my problem, is too many of us treat from the lens that which we live. And that's kind of crazy because most of us don't have dental problems. We're in the dental industry, so primarily, or maybe you did it as a child, but like you've been taught to take care of your teeth or you've gotten the dental work done. And so like, you know, you don't necessarily know what it's like to be on the other side. So this is kind of where I'm at. And so now I'm going to kind of jump into this picture and I'll try to describe it for those of you that can't get onto YouTube and watch it. But basically it's your typical patient. We all have patients that are like this. I'm going to go ahead and pull up my screen here. There we go. And so I got a picture up on my screen of an upper arch, just an upper arch photo. And patient's got second molar to second molar, and they've got a couple crowns, and then they've got a couple older silver fillings. So the question is, do we need to diagnose and treatment plan any dentistry on this patient? And I look at this and I immediately say, wow, yes, there are things that I need to inform the patient about. I need to share with them the state of their restorations in their mouth, and then I need to let them make the decision based off their own judgment on what they want to do. Now, I'll get to that in a second. So first off is when I see a tooth like this, and this is a silver filling that has, you know, marginal leakage, and then it has your classic undermined enamel where it's just waiting for the cusp to break off. Now, every single one of us is, if you've been in dentistry for, you know, a year, has seen people walk in where they've got amalgams and they have cusps that have sheared off. So again, the question goes back, do I wait till the cusp shears or do I fix it? When do I fix it? Well, there's no recurrent decay, but there is a whole lot of undermined enamel, or there's a fracture in it that is going to cause this tooth to essentially break at some point. At what point do I intervene and treat it? Now, this will get into a little bit of the treatment planning part, is that I don't care how you fix it. Some of you may be amazing with composite. Some of you may be really good with conservative type onlays or inlays, and you can be creative. I'm just trying to establish that when I see something like this, that we have to understand that it's broken. Mrs. Jones, this tooth has a problem. The restorations that were there are no longer doing what they were supposed to do. They're leaking, they're being hard on the tooth, and without moving forward and potentially restoring this tooth, we run the risk of breaking the tooth or having problems down the road. Are you someone who likes to be more proactive or reactive into treating this tooth? Now, what I want you to appreciate is, have I talked about what we should do with this tooth? No, because frankly, it doesn't matter at this point. This is another pet peeve of mine. Associate doctors will come up and they're like, hey, what would you do to this tooth? And I'm like, well, who cares what I would do? What does the patient want? Do they want something that's going to last? Do they want something like, it doesn't matter on some level until the patient knows what they want. So at this point, then I can make a decision. If the patient's like, yes, I want to treat it, then I deliver what the answer is. The patient doesn't get an option. The patient doesn't get an option to decide whether this is a filling, an onlay, or a crown. That'd be like me going to the mechanic and being like, yeah, I want you to put this part and piece of my engine. Like, I don't have the, I have, I, that's the, there's a foundational trust and base knowledge that I can't give someone a dental school degree in education and the time that I have with them for them to make the right decision on how to treat this tooth. So at that point, then we do have to lean on, okay, the patient would like to be proactive. The patient would like to fix the restoration that's no longer doing what it was intended to do. And based off my clinical experience, I would do a X on this. I would do X on this. Because, in my hands, this is a restoration I would do a crown on. That's not because that you couldn't be successful with another one. It's that in my hands, in my experience, with my bonding protocols and the way that I do it based on my current clinical skill set, I know that that's the most predictable restoration that I can give someone for a longer term prognosis. Now, some of you may look at this and be like, you may be more conservative. I'm okay with that. But when I see cracks that go, you know, across the marginal ridge here, across the central groove here, we have undermining here, it's difficult to make a decision. Now, here's what I also have to make very clear. We can't get into this maybe fill, maybe crown BS. Now, hear me out. Don't just be like, you can't do that. No, I'm a believer that we don't introduce the idea that things could be or couldn't be something. I want to be clear, definitive, and concise. Now, having said that, that's part of the buying process. In clinical reality, I will never not do something that isn't the right decision based off the tooth and situation that I'm in there. I got to reiterate that. I would never do something that when I get into a situation, remove the filling, look at the tooth and say, hey, now with the knowledge I have that I didn't have before, with all this removed, seeing what I see now, I may change the way that I treat the tooth. But it's always going to be in a way that I move more conservatively, because ideally I would always be treatment planning what is a realistic worst case scenario. Now, words matter, right? So I say realistic worst case scenario very specifically because I would not tell a patient this tooth could be a root canal and crown. At this point, if they have no sensitivity, no issues, I'm going to bet, and based off the experience that I've had and my whatever, that I should be able to prep this tooth, treat this tooth, and not get into the nerve. It would be something that on some level was brought in by me, not something that was needed necessarily. So you can't treatment plan every filling for a root canal crown. Like that's ridiculous. We have to be able to hit the target with our, more often than not, I need to see something. And then what I say is what I do. That's another pet peeve of mine. Like don't always treatment plan a crown if it can be a filling. Like if you know, hey, I can fill this tooth, treatment plan the filling. We as the dentist should try to every day be able to be more precise and accurate in the diagnosis, the treatment that we do, and the clinical outcome that we actually perform when we do the treatment. We need to align those. It's challenging for our treatment coordinators, our billing team, the patient's understanding if we're constantly giving them a moving target of, I treatment planned this and I did this, treatment planned this and I did this. So I try to hit the target, but I typically am going to treatment plan the more likely worst case scenario. And if I get into a situation where I don't need to do that, then I will do what's best for the tooth. So hopefully that kind of gives some guidance. So in this tooth, in my opinion, it's almost impossible to know what you're going to do until you get in there and remove everything that needs to be removed. And at that point is really when you can make the best clinical judgment. But if you lead with that communication-wise, that leads to lack of confidence, lack of conciseness, and lack of clarity, all of which are things patients don't buy on. That has to be super clear. Let's jump over to this one over here. Crack on the marginal ridge, going under this occlusal crack across the middle, going out the back. Same kind of thing. In my opinion, this is a tooth that should be treated. Now, how it's treated, again, that's up for discussion, debate. I don't want to get into that. But my point is I look at this and I say, okay, you know, this restoration looks fine. This restoration looks fine. I've got two teeth that I believe that should be restored. And here's the crazy part. In my office, this patient came in and these teeth weren't originally treatment planned. So that's problematic. Now, part of this is those of you that do run practices that have associates, this should be a clue in that if you're not reviewing the photos and the x-rays and the new patients that they see, and you're giving feedback to calibrate yourself, then you're doing yourself a disservice. So this is something that I do on a pretty regular basis because I want to make sure that that the Sullivan Dental Partners philosophy and way of doing things is being translated down through my team, whether that's the doctors or other team members, even when I'm not there. And so that means I've got to make time to go back and look at things and see what's going on. So we'll be done with that. I'm going to put my face again here. So that's a big one to me is I'm really trying to work with my doctors to understand that that's the case. Now, I do want to go into another case because I think it just kind of ties this all in a bigger picture. And I'm actually going to go back. This is one that I think is more challenging. It's a second molar. Second molar has a small occlusal composite. This obviously was a silver filling at one point. It does have a crack going across essentially the central groove across the marginal ridges. But the other part I want to point out is the erosion. You know, I asked my newest associate, Sarah, about this case, and I said, what do you see? She said, well, leaky composite, maybe some decay. She didn't really mention the crack. She didn't mention the erosion. She didn't mention that, you know, that erosion leads to the supereruption of teeth, which means leads to shortened clinical crown height, decreasing VDO. It's a second molar, so it's first point of contact. So that has a more likelihood to disrupt the bite, which can disrupt the joint, which can cause pain, which can cause airway. Like this is the challenge that we have is you got to get the education to be able to see that. Because if you don't see the dentistry, you can't treat the dentistry, you can't help the patients. But if you don't bring the communication along, talking about this tooth would create unbelievable overwhelm and overdiagnosis and to the patient and to the community and to everything else. Because if you look at this, most people would be like, yeah, I'm not treating that tooth. And I'm not sure I would treat that tooth. I'm not advocating that I would or should. I'm just advocating that we have to start seeing this, and we've got to start bringing it up and giving patients the opportunity to say yes to the best. Because this is a great example. If I don't treat this tooth now, if I don't intervene, the erosion wear will continue to happen. The teeth will continue to erupt. It's possible the maxillary tooth continues to erupt down into the mandibular, which gets shorter and shorter and shorter, to at what point this tooth becomes sensitive, it breaks, or it has to be intervened with. I have no more enamel to bond to, or no clinical ferrule to actually cement a crown with. And then that decreases the prognosis of the long-term ability to keep this tooth. And so if you connect the dots from A to B to B to C to C to so on, you start to realize that, gosh, it seems extreme, but does intervening now with a restoration that solidifies this tooth and puts back what was there before by early prevention, does that now increase the prognosis and does that become more conservative in the long run? Does intervening and getting into the tooth now, is that actually more conservative than not getting into the tooth? And for most of these circumstances, I would argue it is. Now, maybe you don't crown this tooth. Maybe you remove all the dentin exposure that's there. You remove the old filling and you do an inlay that, again, seals and protects the tooth and sustains wear better than the current situation. Maybe you believe that based off the cracks that you see and you get in there, that this is a classic fracture type situation, and you believe that crowning the tooth is the better way to go. I want to get less into that conversation and more about that, the conversation of being able to see this, want to address this, and trying to fix the tooth. So, whew, that's a lot. And some of this, you know, these aren't like, it's not like I'm coming up with this stuff. A lot of this stuff I learned at COIS, you know, that this idea that based off the materials we have now that I can remove something that's completely untooth-like, like a silver filling, that has no sort of properties that are even remotely like teeth, and I can replace it with something that has almost similar identical properties to the way that teeth function and work. Maybe that's a better way of treating the patient until not doing it. You know, you talk about early prevention. In most things in life, if I treat it earlier prevention, I'm less likely to have a catastrophic event, right? Like if I wait till the cusp breaks, most of the time, 90% of the time, I can just crown the tooth dead. But 5% of the time, it breaks and now it's getting root canal and crown. And then there's probably another 5% of the time where it breaks and now we're losing the tooth. I'm just a believer that we've got to give patients the understanding and the knowledge that what we know is that if this tooth goes untreated, these things will happen. And based off their risk tolerance, we allow them to make the best decision that they can based off that risk tolerance, because they know their risk. They don't know the science and the dental part, but they know their risk. We can give them the solution that fixes their problem. That was a lot. I think this probably may be a little bit of like a hot topic issue, hot topic take. I think this episode may stir up something. If it does, let me know. I'm always down to chat about it, have conversations. I think that ultimately the point in this is not to say that I'm totally right. It's to say that we need to communicate and learn and push each other to think differently and do things differently. So I hope that you enjoy this episode. Super pumped about just kind of the podcast, where it's at, and what's to come. If you've got topics that you want to hear, let me know. Otherwise, make 2024 the year to get into implants. If you're not placing implants, come to 3D Dentists, live patient surgeries, singles all the way up to full arch, advanced bone grafting, sinus lift. We'd love to have you. Otherwise, work smarter, not harder. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.